Throughout the 60s and 70s, cops hunted down key figures of the Dixie Mafia, including its enigmatic ringleader, Kirksey Nix.
I'm interested in making money. I'm not interested in hurting people.
15 years into Kirksey's life sentence, the Dixie Mafia was practically folklore, but that would soon change. I'm Jed Lipinski. This is Gone South, a documentary podcast from C13 Originals, a Cadence 13 studio. Season 2, The Dixie Mafia. Available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Throughout the 60s and 70s, cops hunted down key figures of the Dixie Mafia, including its enigmatic ringleader, Kirksey Nix.
I'm interested in making money. I'm not interested in hurting people.
15 years into Kirksey's life sentence, the Dixie Mafia was practically folklore, but that would soon change. I'm Jed Lipinski. This is Gone South, a documentary podcast from C13 Originals, a Cadence 13 studio. Season 2, The Dixie Mafia. Available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I have been promising you a special surprise guest. I don't think that I could come up with any better way to wrap up 2022 than to welcome back our friend. We call him Matt the Musher, affectionately. Matt Pavelio is his name. He's the after hours favorite Iditarod racer. At least he was in 2022, and we're hoping for an update as we turn the calendar to a new year. Matt, happy holidays to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me again, Amy, and happy holidays to you as well.
How are you? That's a loaded question, you know.
Good. A little bit lost this year, but doing good, doing good.
Why are you lost?
Well, last year, I think when we were talking, you know, I was kind of looking at one of the biggest, neatest opportunities, obstacles, athletic endeavors, just kind of looking at the Iditarod. And this year, I wouldn't say lost. I've stepped back in my role from like being the primary musher in the yard, and I'm kind of just a consultant, a coach, and helping a group of ladies that want to qualify for the Iditarod, and then my daughter kind of get ready for the races for the season. So a smaller kennel with less ambitious goals this year, I would say, to a certain extent. I mean, we don't have a 1,000-mile race. But, that weather has been crazy, and that's kind of been the big story up here as well. But I think Buffalo and that those guys, they kind of take the cake. And, our heart goes out to them. We understand the bad weather, but that's next level up there. So, yeah, lots of little obstacles. But, not running Iditarod this year, but having some fun, kind of a different perspective, I guess, on the whole sport.
Well, I guess I had anticipated that your decision would be this one, only from our text messaging, but also knowing kind of where you were. But I'm sure people would like to know why, if you wouldn't mind telling us what made you decide not to follow up and race again this year.
Well, I mean, it's, You know, there's all these unlimited, goals and lofty expectations on myself, but, I've got limited resources and limited energy. And so it kind of boils down to, kind of got to go to work. And, if I could pull like an Air Emirates type of sponsorship or, something like that, then I would be, I would pay my mortgage that way, and I would go out and run dogs all day long. I think economics break it down, but sure. I mean, furthermore, it's just to do it right, you got to put your everything into it, and it takes too much away from the family, the career, and the important things in life. So it was a matter of stepping back, because when I do it again, I want to do it right. So, and I'm not saying if someone fell off of a team today and needed an Iditarod racer, I wouldn't jump in. But I probably wouldn't this year, because I would bust up a family vacation to Maui, and that would probably not end well for me, so it was a couple complicated, it was just complicated like decision. But I'll tell you, Amy, there's no way that I'm not thinking about it every day, and the hardest thing is to be on the sideline watching other people prepare for races and be ready and talk about it, and just the camaraderie of the other mushers. I've already been at one race this year that my daughter ran and another lady from the kennel ran, And being on the sidelines like that, watching everybody take care of the dogs and do their thing, it's hard. It's very, very hard to watch that. Mm. So, yeah, well, it's definitely difficult.
I can imagine. It sounds, though, like the door is open at some point that you would like to do this again if the opportunity presents itself.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Yeah, I think I made a lot of good friends, a fairly good name for myself with the veterinarians and the race officials and then just other racers where I had, we had our, not our pick of kennels, but we had a lot of different kennels that were, that wanted myself and my daughter to come in and kind of train their teams up. We had proven Iditarod teams that were going to pay us and, you know, could have put us up in a house type of thing. And then we had friends that would have competitive teams that aren't able to do it this year. Mm. And in the end, you have to go to what is the best, you know, the best fit. And we wanted a place that we could make a difference, that we, you know, like our skills, my daughter and I, our skills are validated. So we found a small kennel that did just that. So yeah, there'll be a time when we go back and we find a team and we do whatever we can to make it, you know, to do it right and do it the right way. Everything from nutrition to training, you know, to dog care, we want to do it all the right way. So we have to find the right system, the right place, and the right opportunity for growth. I know all that sounds cliche, you know, right? But it is. I mean, I don't want to be a place where I'm, you know, trying to, you know, put a square peg into a round hole. So that we found the right spot for us this year to grow my daughter. She'll be running her second junior Iditarod team and then third junior Willow team. And these are like 100-mile wilderness races where there's no support. You send your kid into the wilds of Alaska for 2 days with a tracker and, you know, all the perils, frozen lakes, frozen rivers, you know, moose, mountain passes and things like that. And I mean, she's 15. So that's, I mean, it's pretty neat getting her ready for that. And having her grow from last year. It's pretty neat. Coaching's neat, but it's kind of a neat way to stay with the sport.
I definitely understand. Lots of former athletes, they make that jump to coaching too because it keeps them close to the sport that they love. We're spending a few minutes with Matt the Musher, Matt Pavelio. He's joining us from Alaska for the first time in a long time. And I just want you to know we've had so many people who've asked over the course of the last, say, 9 months or so. And you weren't just with us for the course of your rookie Iditarod, which was early 22, but also you were a participant in the After Hours Chubby Bunny Championship. So, of course, we'll need to have you do that with us again coming up in late March or early April. Yes, because you are a reigning co-champion along with producer Jay. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Well, I want to ask then about your daughter and the coaching. You just kind of outlined the fears for a parent. And someone who's done it, and you went through a lot of those perils last year yourself. What types of ways do you feel like you can help her, and how are you coaching her to do this again?
Poorly so far. Tonight, I'm finishing my shift in the emergency room, and I kind of send her a text message and say, you know, well, I want you to kind of get ready for a run. And this is going to be a serious training run, a 40 miler. And, you know, it's everything from gear to for ourselves. We call it mandatory gear, everything you got to have in your sled that would keep you alive or you need to take care of the dogs has to be in the sled. And then all the rigging and all of the things. And then I also wanted her to call and talk to the other girls in the yard and figure out which dogs are going and which trails we should run on. We have 3 or 4 major trail systems in the neighborhood. And we have had, you know, 48 inches of snow and just Whoa. All sorts of craziness out there. So it has been finding trails to run are hard. But having her kind of seek that type of information out and then put it all together, that's going to be the next step because then she's, you know, she's making her list. She's checking it twice. She's kind of going through all the things. And the thing is, I didn't give her quite a great list. I kind of fragmented my thoughts and I came back and some of the stuff was done, and just kind of learning that to give someone good directions, you got to give them a good checklist, and then they can succeed. But if you kind of just, you know, I was just a little vague. And so once I kind of get that stuff around, I think it, she'll be much better off. Seeing her work with the dogs and perform the sport itself, she's a natural. She's wonderful. She's wonderful in cold conditions and harsh conditions and wind. And just in the 11th, she competed against adults and she did wonderful. She was just nice, clean, easy breezy. But the back end of it, preparing for the expeditions and that type of stuff, is and making the list herself and kind of putting it all together. She knows the stuff. She's done it. But just actually having her do that whole process, is that's the next step. And she'll do it. She's a very organized woman and lady, and she's much smarter than I am. So it's fun to watch her come around.
Mm. Well, I know last year she did the junior Iditarod, and I just remember the videos and your pride as a parent. I think I remember asking you about you watching her compete and waiting for her to show up at the finish line versus your own competition. And I think many parents can identify. It's far more nerve-wracking, if I remember correctly, that's what you told us, to be watching and waiting for her than to actually do it yourself.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think about Raisman's parents in the Olympics. I think I said it last year, but like, her mom and dad were just so nervous, contorting their bodies and just like, you know, ooh, and that's what you feel like. I mean, we every 5 seconds we're watching the tracker to see where she is, and the GPS trackers that follow them along, and then, you know, trying to be there for her at the beginning and the end without overstepping, you know, keeping her like, it's her job, it's her race, it's her stuff to do, and not like overstepping, because at the point the competition starts, your coaching is pretty much done. You're just there as support. And she needs me there, but probably is just kind of a quiet in the background, you know, just a pillar. If she needs me, she can come to me. And
nothing says quiet and in the background quite like you, Matt.
After just a few, that's kind of my MO.
Nice. Well, I know that it was a tough decision for you, because I can hear it, but also know how much you feel like you grew as a person and as a team leader and as a driver and all those things over the course of your own experience. So we will be rooting you on whenever it is that you decide that you're ready to jump back in. But I know our original conversation with you started over something as simple as best dog breed. And you called us up from Alaska over a year ago to tell us that Huskies were by far the best dog breed out there. And so being around the dogs, is that still therapeutic for you?
Oh yeah. There's, you know, every yard you get to go into, it's there's all the I have a fondness for the underdogs, so we every yard you go into, you find these dogs, and I just always gravitate towards them. And working with this team, there's, you know, the bear litter that we have, Chicago and Grizzly and Kodiak, and and Yogi.
Aww.
And Teddy, those are all the, you know, they're all the different types of bears. This litter is amazing, right? So they kind of carry the yard. You don't have to worry about them. There's a few scrappers in there. And then Lewis and Clark are two just wonderful dogs. And then a few older dogs. We've got Walnut, Spruce, and then my boy Birchwood, who's kind of he's in the back of the pack, and I just love him. He's a little bit growly with other dogs, but doesn't fight. And I really want him to come on strong, but he's probably kind of fallen off a little bit. And then we get a new guy, Rango, that's young and a little bit spastic, and he just pulls so hard, but he, you know, doesn't have that self-preservation for like distance running. I bet you he would be like a wonderful mid-distance guy, or like, an 800 meter runner or something like that, but he's not that marathoner. And it's being around the dogs is great. And then like, and just running them, like tomorrow my daughter and I will go out for 40 miles.
Nice.
And all your problems go away. Last year, every day I wasn't at the hospital, I was running dogs, and that's not necessarily the case this year. And you find out that is, you got to be doing my makeup, my genetic makeup, I got to be moving forward and I got to be, you know, competing somehow. I don't know if it's checkers or darts or you know, golf or whatever. I got to be doing something, but dogs, definitely. I found my, you know, my number one, outdoor endeavor, I guess. And when I'm doing it, I'm in a better place.
Mm. Matt the Musher is with us from Alaska. And after his rookie Iditarod, man, did life change for him. So want to get an update on some of the various adventures he has going on. But forgive me for not knowing this. I don't know how it works or how far, you know, the training and the kennels and the terrain, all that is, and what it's like. But do you ever see any of the dogs that you ran with last year? Have you had a chance to catch up with any of them?
Yes, I mean, bits and pieces. So a few of them, your boy Louie, and a few of them went with Mats Peterson. He's like a longtime Iditarodder, and they live in Norway now. So if I think he's in Degali Park or something like that.
Oh, my gosh.
And so, I think eight of them. They were scooped up. Kathleen, the owner of the kennel that I worked with before, was kind of downsizing. And so she sold the core of her race team pretty well right after the race, just maybe a month after the race. And then the rest of the dogs competed in some of the local races, the dryland races, which is like you run with the dog or the dog, two dogs pull a bike, and it's kind of a way to train pre-snow. And then we'll start seeing them now in the next week and a half. We'll be at the same races for the rest of the season. So I'll get to bump into all the girls again. And it's difficult. I think about them often. They were very sweet. We came a long way together, and we spent a lot of nights together. And I think they're doing good. There's another nurse from the lower 48 that came up, and she is attempting to qualify for Iditarod. So Kathleen and a couple other the kennel owner and a couple other Iditarodders are helping this young lady get qualified. So the team's doing what it's is in very, very good hands again. Although there's so much snow up there, I think everyone's kind of having problems getting training miles in right now because there's just tons and tons of snow. So I worry about them like that, but only because I can't be there to help them.
Yes.
I've got a group of dogs I can help, and from here on out, we are we're full bore. We got about 6 weeks before TG's first race, and the focus is bringing their speed up and keeping them healthy, healthy and fat.
Healthy and fat. I can't even imagine the attachment that you have formed with them, and that will always be one that's really emotional too, but you relied on them in the wilderness and some of the conditions that you pointed out. If you did not ever hear Matt the Musher's story as told on After Hours, not only do we have that preserved on our YouTube channel, but he was kind enough to give us exclusive access to some of his photos and videos that we also, producer Jay, put together with his story of his Iditarod, his rookie Iditarod experience. So again, that's on our YouTube channel. One of our most popular guests of 21 and 22. Matt, we have to take a quick break, but then I want to get an update because I know you've been working on some kind of new adventures. If you wouldn't mind hanging on, we'll get right back to you. Matt the Musher is with us from Alaska. A little bit of a different shift in 22 and 23, but we're so glad to have him with us and getting an update here on After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Who let the dogs out?
Listening to After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
I swear I had nothing to do with that. That was all Carlos. But it fits for our special guest. Been waiting a long time to get an update from Matt the Musher, who joins us from Alaska. We first connected over a year ago over best dog breed, and Matt really had an answer that no one else could trump, and he's with us for a couple more minutes here after hours on CBS Sports Radio. So you are not going to run the Iditarod in 2023, but that door is still open, and I can hear it in your voice, though. I am pretty excited for your daughter to continue in this adventure. I know that she will rely on your expertise as well as just your confidence in her, which you definitely have. But you've been busy connecting with a lot of others in the community, the mushing community. So over the past few months, like even going back to April, what's it been like for you now to be part of that club, Matt?
It's pretty neat. You know, we know what each other, you know, we know what we've been through, you know, it's hard to completely understand. Everyone has their own takes on what we did and how we did it. It's a neat fraternity, and it's hard to get into, and it's super sweet. I think it's you know, you can cry with them, you can talk to them, you can politic with them, you know, and we all know where we've been, but it's been very neat. It's kind of, the whole thing has opened up a few little neat opportunities. Get to speak at my professional nursing association's annual conference up here, and I'll get to do that again later on in the year. I got to tell my story in front of, I don't know, there are 400 or 500 people at an event, kind of like the Moth on NPR, cool. But it's our version, Arctic Entries. And so I'll go back during the Iditarod time when we do another show where we fill one of our bigger event arenas here. I mean, and I get to help MC with one of my good friends. So we'll have 7 storytellers. The whole thing has opened up a ton of opportunities, but I think you're kind of alluding to it, but I've been taking pictures, selfies with every finisher I come across. And I have, out of the 823 finishers, you know, I'm working my way through there now, and I meet people all the time that refer me to someone, or I kind of meet a friend of a friend, and I've taken pictures with people's family members, Iditarod finishers that have passed away, and I would just post me in a picture of them with our finishing numbers. And then I started putting their names and adding stories to them. And I've taken pictures with finishers from 1974.
Wow.
People that have passed away in the last just couple of years. They're, you know, a daughter or a grandson, and just hearing all these amazing heroic stories of these people, or, you know, sad stories of how they passed, or just kind of just wild stories that, you know, nobody in Hollywood could write these stories. You know, these are just to be told, you know, around a campfire type of thing. So that project's been pretty neat. And it's just, that's just because I'm a social media junkie and I like taking selfies with people. But there's some really neat people running around the neighborhoods up here, for sure.
What are a couple of the more popular questions that you get asked when you speak, or when people want to hear about your Iditarod experience?
I think how do you deal with the sleep deprivation? and do the dogs really like to do it? And, the dogs really like to do it. I think, anytime you do anything with positive reinforcement
meaning treats,
treats. Yeah. I mean, nonstop. And they always went for them. I found their rhythms, you know, I knew what they wanted. And if not, I had another type of treat. Buffalo, they could have beef, they could have chicken fat, they could have king salmon, they could have cat food, they could have crap like Old Roy dog food. I mean, most of their dog food is like high-end $70 a bag type stuff, but these guys had just about anything, and they had their rhythms, and once they started eating, they just wouldn't stop. I couldn't feed them enough, and so... they love what they're doing, and they just enjoyed it. But, and then the sleep deprivation thing, I mean, I have no idea how I did it. It's, that's, the, that's the,
that's one of the reasons that, like, it scares me to ever do it again. Is like, I have no idea how I did it. I think I just kind of woke up and I was a gnome at a certain point, you know. I just kind of, for, you know, for 2 weeks you exist on the trail in this kind of trance-like state, and then you just kind of, you know, come over this hill and they're like, oh shoot, there's the finish line. How about that?
Oh my gosh. Wow. I think adrenaline, but also I would say probably your time as a nurse, especially working in the ER, prepares you for that as well, because there are long hours and there are times when you're exhausted on your feet and yet you keep going because you have to.
Right. I mean, you know, if your mic comes unplugged, you plug it back in and you just keep going on.
Okay. Low blow,
no matter
Matt.
What.
Low blow.
No matter what. No. But, you know, it's tough. It's tough. Yes. Yes, absolutely.
25 years of doing radio, and I've never walked in a studio where the mic was unplugged, ever, in 25 years. How does anyone ever unplug the mic and not plug it back in is my dumb question, I guess.
Who knows? It is. It's awesome. It's flip-flopping schedules, too. It's so hard to do that. Nights to days, days to nights. You end up losing days. And Amy, as much as I love you in this slot, like, we want you to, I want you to have normal, natural rhythms. Some people pretend to like nights for a long, long time. And then
I don't know what you're talking about.
I've done my nights, and it was fantastic. Nights for me, if I did night shifts, I could coach during the day. So
there
I coached, and this is just pre-racing stuff. I was able to work my night shifts, get a couple hours of sleep, go and coach, and then make it to my next shift. So there's definitely reasons to be there. But man, it can be very hard when you're making those switches over, or you're like, I'm not going to sleep today. I'm just going to go to bed at a normal person's time. And I don't know how you do it. I don't know how people, I've done it for times, but night shifts are hard.
So, they definitely are. It won't be forever, though. I tell you, at the end of this contract, it'll be 10 years on this particular time slot, and I'm thinking that's probably enough. So we'll see. I'll cross that bridge when we come to it. Before I let you go, I know that I talked to you over the summertime. You were in Michigan, so you were home, and you were spending time with family, which was great. And you asked me a question about starting a podcast. Now, I told you that I would help. Apparently, as it turns out, you don't need my help. But whatever happened with the Matt the Mush podcast?
Well, it's very neat. A very good friend from Norway, Peter Varga, who's followed the race and a photojournalist, and he's been all over the world. He works for a company, it's his place, Tying Knot Studio. He approached me about it. He said, why would you consider starting a podcast and interviewing people one-on-one? So this is how far we've gotten. We've gotten our some basic equipment, because everybody says don't go buy the thousands of dollars worth of stuff. Just get basic stuff. And then I've gotten yeses from a lot, from a few top mushers, like Jesse Holmes from Life Below Zero. He's, you know, 80,000 Instagram followers, huge following. He would be an interesting guy to talk to. But I haven't been able to get an interview. I'm still working on all the tech stuff, like do I have my settings right on GarageBand, and do am I sending the right type of file? And Amy, I'm not that guy. I mean, I need a producer, James or Carlos or whoever, that's the stuff, because I'm going to send Peter the raw files in Norway. Right. He'll put it all together, and then we'll do our show. He lets me kind of do my chit chat, and that's probably what I'm good at. But the tech stuff and making it sound good so we have a decent product that's the part we're working on. So slowly but surely, because there's not enough time in a day to get everything done.
Yes.
But I would like to get some of these stories out there, because extraordinary stuff. Like this Ben Jacobson guy that I met his family, he has an amazing story. And then met another fella's grandson that had passed. And this guy, his grandfather had been in this race called the Great Alaskan Sweepstakes. It's every 25 years. And he was a couple to get a fourth place finish, and then the way home his plane crashed with him and another musher and a bunch of dogs. And it's just there's these amazing stories of, you know, survival and winning and loss, and I think if you I want some cool fluffy information from these guys, you know, like what's your favorite dog breed, but that's going to start the conversation, and hopefully we get some really cool, neat stuff. And I don't get too serious and I keep it quirky because that's what I like. It's slowly but surely. I've got some yeses on the interviews. Got to work out that tech stuff. Got to make sure things are plugged in.
Okay.
Oh, my gosh. Enough. That was two times. I'm sorry. Yeah, overdid it.
No, I totally understand, though, because it's not my area of expertise either, though after as many years as I've done it, I feel like I could fake my way through a conversation. But, yes, we all need a producer, Jay. He's really good at the tech stuff. So I am confident that he would be happy to help you with any of that if you need it. And, of course, we're here if you would like to launch your podcast. We'd be happy to help you promote it, too. And you have to promise us that you'll return when it's time for the follow-up to the Chubby Bunny National Championship.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it should be hosted possibly at some sort of like special golf event around Easter time, say the Masters or something like that. And it would get someplace warm and golf and do all of that. Because second, when I give up mushing, I'm going, you know, I'm definitely senior amateur type of guy. That's where I want to be in the golf world. So,
but you're not giving up mushing yet. Just to confirm, though you're not racing in 23, you're not giving up mushing yet. You will be mushing again.
Oh, yeah. Everything sucks compared to mushing. Yes, that's true.
Nice. I like it. Well, thank you for making your announcement here on the show. And thank you for spending a half hour plus with us. Thank you for giving me crap about a microphone cord that wasn't plugged
in. Sorry.
No, don't be sorry. I would love for you to come back and let us know how your daughter's doing as she goes through this process. I know that you're a proud papa, but really, you're welcome back anytime, even if you just want to practice your podcasting skills.
Sounds good, Amy. I appreciate it. And thank you for the offers to help. It's definitely going to be needed. So thank you.
Perfect. Happy New Year to you and your family. And we will talk soon, Matt. Be safe.
Thank you, Amy. Bye-bye.
Matt Pavelio, Matt the Musher, he is one of your favorites, and I've been saving him as a bit of a holiday surprise. So I wanted to make sure that you heard from him. He's had some kind of a crazy year. You can hear it in his voice, though. Definitely misses having that adventure on his plate for the upcoming spring, late winter, early spring, but he's not done. He's not retiring. So we're going to continue to follow his career. And again, if you missed his story of the 22 Iditarod, he was a rookie. He finished. It was harrowing. It was crazy. There were animal encounters. There are also videos and photos on our YouTube channel, After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Throughout the 60s and 70s, cops hunted down key figures of the Dixie Mafia, including its enigmatic ringleader, Kirksey Nix.
I'm interested in making money. I'm not interested in hurting people.
15 years into Kirksey's life sentence, the Dixie Mafia was practically folklore, but that would soon change. I'm Jed Lipinski. This is Gone South, a documentary podcast from C13 Originals, a Cadence 13 studio. Season 2, The Dixie Mafia. Available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.